Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please contact us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about mental preparation. And of course, we all do that every time we deal with other people. We have to think about who we're going to deal with and what we're going to say and what we think they'd like and what we think we would like and like that, right? Yeah. But let's talk about it within our context. What types of mental preparation do we need as leaders? As leaders within our context of a negotiation, an alternative dispute resolution, a consensus building, right? Even a workshop or a seminar. What kind of mental preparation do we need as leaders to do so that we can be effective, so that we as a group can reach our successfully negotiated outcome? Yes. Oh, I see we have lots of people. Thank you very much for being here and for all of your participation. So what kind of mental preparation do we need to do? Oh, you know what? I think we're going to have some consensus today. Yay! I think the first one we're going to be talking about is not so much mental preparation, although it certainly causes it because we have to think about what we're doing, but actual preparation, right? The preparation of reading everything and thinking about it. That's, of course, our first step. You know what I do whenever I have clients that are needing to reach consensus, especially if there is some contention amongst them, right? There's different opinions. Sometimes, actually a lot of times, I'm called in after the group has been in existence for a little while and, well, how shall I put this delicately, has not been successful. And they need a third-party impartial, which would be me, to come in and say, you know, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to handle it. This is how we're going to reach consensus and go forward to a successful conclusion. So, a lot of times I have that, and I ask the parties, the different sides, I suppose we could call them, to actually give me written information about what they think is going on, really, what they'd like to see happen, what their position is, and like that. Because not only does it cause me to have mental preparation, right, because I have to read it all, but it causes them to have mental preparation. Ah, now we're getting somewhere, right? Yes, they have to think about it because they have to write it down. And then maybe even somebody has to read it or reread it or discuss it. And when they put it down on paper, half the time, it seems stupid or unreasonable. So they have to maybe rethink their position. Rethink what it is that they desire. Rethink what it is that they're going to, well, kind of insist upon when they get to the real thing, right? Yeah. So I make them write it down so that I can read it and think about it and have mental preparation. But I make them think about it and read it and have mental preparation too, right? Because while they're doing it, they have to craft it. And when you're crafting something, you have to think about it. And then you have to show it to somebody, and it makes clarification. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's great. Yes, a lot of people are talking about a preliminary plan of action, right? You have to mentally prepare what it is we're going to do. I'm going to say the next popular, because after all, this is an unscripted show. We talk about where we all take each other, right? Right. I think the next one's going to be, I'm going to call it a conscious effort to stay neutral, which is not all that easy all the time, because sometimes you really think one side's a little bit better than the other, more reasonable. Mm-hmm. So you have to have a conscious effort to stay neutral. This is a good topic, too. I'm going to call our own preconceived notions, to consider our own, as leader, my preconceived notions and their potential impact. Do I have kind of an idea that I really think is true and is going to impact what's happening? Mm-hmm. Good point. A lot of people are talking about physically preparing so that you can be alert. Yeah, because, well, we've done it before, and we need to kind of be able to be physically upright, right? Mm-hmm. And yes, I think our last one is going to be being a role model. You have to mentally prepare for that. Have to kind of take 3 deep breaths sometimes, right? Especially if the group's kind of contentious. And being a human being, they're a little bit getting on your nerves, right? Sometimes that happens. It happens even to me, and I'm pretty even-tempered and quite experienced, and I really do business mediation most of the time. For my employment, right, as an attorney. And so, but sometimes even I feel kind of annoyed when they're just circling around and baring their little teeth. Yeah, no, I can get them separated and I can get them to reach consensus and like that. But it's like, really, we're all adults here. So you have to be a role model of civility and enthusiasm. Yes. Because if you don't do it, they won't do it. Yeah. So let's talk about our actual preparation first off. That's our first one. Mm-hmm. Shaylee and others are saying you need to read and analyze the preliminary information from all sides. Yeah, I do require a written statement of position. This is a good point that Nina and others are saying. That not only do you need a written statement of position, which I think this encompasses, but we need to say it out loud. We need to actually make that clear. But they need to tell you what's already been done. And their kind of opinion of what's already been done will come out in the writing, even if they think that it's kind of neutral writing, if you know what I mean. I don't see a lot of stuff that's real kind of blasphemous. But I do see... You can read between the lines from the tone what they think of what's already been done, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Julian and others are saying they need to give you all of the evidence. Yes, please. I like to see exhibits. When I walk into a negotiation, pardon me. Yeah, I know. I still got the cough. Isn't that weird? When I walk into a negotiation, when I'm the leader, I am the most prepared person in the room because I've read everything that's been presented to me, right? Yeah. Sometimes it's a box because it's got evidence. It's got research of some sort, and I will actually look at it because I want to know, and I will form an opinion, even though I'm impartial, right, as to the foundation of it. And if I'm not sure, before I see the parties, before we really get into it and start to negotiate, I'd like some clarification. Sometimes I get sent something that's just kind of in its raw stage and no explanation as to why I've been sent it. It's just here. Here's a bunch of crud. No. You tell me why you're sending me this. You tell me what you think it means and why, and use a highlighter, you can even do it on the computer nowadays, to show me what you think is the relevant passages. Let's look at that. Tell me what you think that means and why. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And sometimes, in fact, more times than you would expect, when you require that, when you require the evidence and you require a statement of position, especially the evidence part, all sides basically use the same evidence, but they highlight different parts. Or they say different things. The same thing means different things. They draw different conclusions. It's like the blind men and the elephant parable. Remember, yeah, I don't know if it's an Americanism or not, but people are going, what? There's an old parable about interpretation that says, I can't remember how many blind men, let's go six. Blind men went and they touched an elephant to see what it was. And one touched the trunk and he said, an elephant is like a snake. And one touched the leg and said, an elephant is like a tree. And you got the picture. They all touched different parts and they got completely different impressions. And if I may say, kind of wrong impressions about what an elephant was like. And so they'd have to all get together and take all of those impressions and go, look, let's blend them together and see what we've got. Yes. So I ask everybody to send me everything ahead of time. If you do that, you must, of course, read it. You must, of course, look at it, and you must, of course, think about it. Mental preparation. Now I've thought about you. I've formed an opinion. I've written some notes. I know what each side thinks, at least at the moment. And let's go from there. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. This is true, too. Cassia and others are saying that you might even meet as a third-party impartial with each of the sides privately. I do. If we've really got kind of contention going on, and even if we don't, just different opinions, I like to meet privately with each of the parties, each of the sides, so to speak, and talk to them and ask them about what they sent me. I really flesh out what it is we're going to do so that everybody feels comfortable and prepared when they get together. It'll save a lot of kind of preliminary chest pounding and angst, right? Yeah, because people will be already satisfied that they've got a good leader, they've got a third party impartial. We're going to get somewhere, and everybody's going to know that somewhere along the line, we're going to reach consensus, which means that everybody is going to have to give a little. Mm-hmm. See, they're already thinking about how to modify their requirements, right? Yeah, and that's a good mindset to start out with. It's a good group dynamic. Mm-hmm. Yes. Hussein is making a good point, too. Hussein says that you need to have an analysis of the opposition, too. Yes. Now, you can't ask the opposition to send you information, you know, about their side. The opposition being someone who's not in your group, not in your room, but is taking an opposing viewpoint to whatever it is that this group would like, the one that you are leading. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there is quite a bit of opposition. It's kind of contentious issues, right? Right. The Internet's fabulous for finding out about the opposition. Let's go look. Let's see who's out there. Let's see what they say, what they think. Let's see who's backing them, which is interesting, right? Yeah? Let's see how they're approaching their issues. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's kind of a modern media, like a blogging type escalation going on, right? Let's see what's happening out in the real world, because that's where we live. We're practical people. Yeah. So we want to look at the opposition and find out as much as we can so that we can know what we would like to do, what they would like to do, and how maybe we might be able to reach middle ground. You never know. Yeah, we might be able to reach middle ground. That would be fine, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what do we need after we get all this kind of physical, actual preparation done, right, and mental preparation? We're going to make ourselves a plan of action, which is our next topic, right? Yeah. But remember that it's a preliminary plan of action. Don't make something that's so so specific or so general that it's useless, but so specific that it is hard to attain, right? Because as you go along, it's going to change. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need to be modified. As Alex says, you need to preliminary because you need to be able to modify it as the process evolves. Yes, as we go along, we're going to modify. We're going to think about it, right? Our plan of action is always preliminary, is always open to modification and interpretation as we go further along, right? But we need to have an initial plan of action so that we can have, well, a call to action so that we can start doing something, right? And finding out which direction we're going to head for. A lot of people are talking about transparency. We talk about that a lot on these shows. By the way, they're archived on our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Yes, yes. We talk a lot about transparency. And a lot of times it really boils down to explaining what it is you're doing. Yeah. Hidaharu says, is reminding us that we've done it 1,000 times, these kinds of negotiations, these kinds of consensus building, even these kinds of workshops and seminars. And Hidaharu says that you have to remember that although you've done it 1,000 times, it's your participants' first time, maybe. Mm-hmm. They don't know what's going on exactly. They don't know what to expect. That's annoying. You want to tell people what it is to expect so that they're clear on what they're doing. Yeah, so they're clear on what is it that I need so that... What is it that I need to do? What is my obligation? Well, how are we going to go from point A to point B here, right? Don't you like to know that when you're in a group, when you're trying to get something done? Don't you like to know what's happening and why? I sure do. If you'd like to know, so would everybody else. And since you're the leader, you're going to tell them, yeah, this is what we're going to do next. And maybe even this is why we're going to do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I said so is not a good reason. People are going, because I said so. No. You want to tell them also, as Nicole and others are saying, you also want to encourage questions. There are no dumb questions. There are questions that are getting kind of repetitive and need to be asked in private during the timeout, those kind of questions. There are questions done to delay things. Those breach the civility rules, which we'll talk about in a minute. But basically speaking, you need to be open to questions, open to helping, open to having someone say, you know, I thought I had it, but I don't know what I'm doing now. As we get further in, I'm not so sure. Without there being some sort of bad repercussions, because you want to know. You want to know if somebody is not pulling their weight, has kind of given up because they have no idea what they're doing. It's kind of wandered off. You want to know these things, and you want to help them. Because what they need is some assistance. They need to be able to ask for it without having any recrimination, right? Always encourage questions. Mm-hmm. Thomas says you need to discuss plans and solicit opinions to make a strong group dynamic. Yes. In the United States, mostly, we like to discuss things a lot, right? We kind of do the democracy thing. Some corporations have a culture of their own. In fact, almost all the big ones do, and I deal with a lot of multinationals. Some countries have a culture, most countries have a culture of their own, but they view leadership in different ways, right? Now, the tendency in the United States is to go for everybody's opinion counts. The tendency in corporate culture, in military culture, in a lot of cultures around the world is you're the leader, lead us. Tell us what we should do next. And you have to know that. You have to know which kind of dynamic you're in, right? Because, of course, you want to explain what's going on and have transparency and discuss the plans. But some groups want you to be more of a team member. We're all going to decide this together, right? And some groups want you to be more of a leader. I will tell you how it's going to be. If nobody has an objection that's really valid, as in that's not going to work because, and I'm an expert, I know this, and you go, oh, good thing you said so. If nobody has an opinion like that that's really important, that's really valid, as in, oh, my God, then this is how we're going to do it, because I'm the leader. And that's what you've got me for, to lead. So it depends on the culture that you're dealing with, whether or not transparency involves a lot of discussion, a lot of what do you think, a lot of giving of opinion. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are talking about creating a timeline as a plan of action. Carolyn and others. Yes, I don't object. You guys have heard this on prior shows, of course. I don't object to making a timeline. I think that it makes things kind of strict. It depends if you need it, right? Because if you blow a timeline, it seems like you're not doing very well. And if it was artificial to begin with, well, maybe it should just be thrown out and we should keep going forward, right? A timeline is most useful when there's an actual artificial time imposed, deadlines, right? Something has to be in by certain dates. Very important not to blow one of them. The best example I can give you is something needs to be put on a ballot, right? There are definite time restrictions, definite deadlines for that. Definite requirements, how many signatures, who approves the writing of it. It's all stuff that needs to be known, stuff that needs to be done, and it needs a definite timeline with plenty of notification that the deadline's coming up so that you don't actually blow something and not get on the ballot because you blew a deadline and you can't file afterwards. Yeah. Yeah, a bunch of countries this is true. In the United States especially, it's because we vote a lot, but we vote at certain times, and stuff gets on the ballot. Sometimes the ballots are very long. There's many things on them. But there's deadlines to get it onto the ballot so that it can be voted on, and deadlines to get all of your requirements in before you can get onto the ballot. For example, signatures, right? Yeah. So it's important. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That a timeline will be essential for that. But just in general, it depends on your group. It depends how complicated. It depends if it'll really help or it'll just be a discouragement. See, I guess that I'm big on timelines only when they're drop-dead dates, right? Yeah. So, yeah, that's a pattern of personal style, I think. It's kind of like making a mission statement. I don't see the point unless it really clarifies what we're doing. And sometimes you need the clarification, sometimes not. But it's not a definite thing that must be done. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Let's go on to mental preparedness and staying neutral, which really sometimes takes three deep breaths, right? Mm-hmm. Because you are called in to be the third party. Impartial, yeah. Yes, Michael says sometimes the group is already in failure and you need to assess the problems and resolve them so you can go forward. Sometimes the group is already in failure. Yeah, kind of. And you need to assess the problems and resolve them so you can go forward. I get called in a lot to those because I have a lot of experience. A lot of times, especially in corporate culture, they don't like to bring in an outsider. So they try to resolve the issues in-house, internally. And it kind of makes things worse because whoever was chosen as the leader, they got chosen kind of because, well, because they've got some sort of rank, for example. But they may not be good at leading a group like that, something that needs to be done, something that needs to be resolved. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's employee issues, too. I get called in, the group's already in failure. They've already, well, they've already kind of got hostility going. So you have to stay neutral because you've been called in as the third party impartial to separate them, to get it straightened out so that they can go forward. Yeah. As Michael says, you need to assess the problems and resolve them so you can go forward. Mm-hmm. Sharon and others are calling this breaking an impasse, which is what it is. They've reached an impasse. They've reached a time in the negotiations where they're really not talking to each other anymore. They've really stalled, right? And you need to come in and find out how come. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mohammed and others are saying that sometimes it's just stubborn clinging to preconceived notions, right? Stubborn clinging to preconceived notions. Oh, we've all seen that, haven't we? Mohammed is so right. Mm-hmm. You know, the best way to come in and know what's going on so you know how to fix it, because you need to, is to break out the 5W questions. The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, why. 5W questions. Mm-hmm. And they will let you get to the bottom of what's happening. Sometimes I even do this by dividing out the people and having little private meetings with them. And I ask the 5W questions, or whichever ones are appropriate. I mean, you don't have to go down the list. And find out what people think went wrong, right? What people want to see. Mm-hmm. And what they think should be done. I solicit the 5W questions from everybody. You might do it in front of the group. You might do it in private. You'd get a better answer, maybe, more truthful. Mm-hmm. And then you go forward from there. Mm-hmm. Because now you've learned something. You've learned the base for the disagreement. Sometimes, surprisingly enough, it's not so much to do with what's at stake now, what's happening now, and very much to do with something that's done and happened in the past. And people are just kind of mad, right? Yeah, always a good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just mad. Just don't want to. Mm-hmm. Don't think so. Yeah, a 5W question. Yeah, they'll get you to the bottom of what's going on, who, what, where, when, and why. Mm-hmm. Drew and others are saying that you need to have empathy for all the participants in order to stay neutral, because you have empathy for all of them. Remember that empathy is not agreement. Empathy is understanding. Empathy is not agreement. Empathy is understanding. I've asked the 5W questions. I now know why, who, what, where, when, and why. I understand why you have that position. Not that I agree with you, that I understand it. Mm-hmm. Yes. Let's come on to the next one, which is leader preconceptions. I'm kind of pushing forward because we have a timeline, don't we? Yeah, we've only got an hour to talk about this. And the last few times we haven't gotten to the recipes at all, I get emails. So this time we're going to try to do at least one. Pardon me. Okay, and the leader preconceptions is our next one up that we talked about as a topic. Mm-hmm. Gabriel and others are saying that we need to be aware of our own preconceptions so that we can guard against them. Yeah, we're human beings. We have ideas. We have theories about how things should go. Yes, we have, well, we've got preconceived notions, right? We've got expectations, some of them even based on a great deal of experience. So we have to be aware of them and be honest about it. We don't have to say them out loud or anything, but we need to understand that we have preconceptions, that we have thought about this, and that we have, well, kind of formed an opinion, right? Yeah. And that we need to guard against them. Even if they're kind of favorable, because they might be favorable to one side or the other, right? Yeah. Except for the favorable preconceived notion, of course, that we are excellent leaders and that we know what we're doing, because we do. People are saying that's not a preconceived notion, that's a fact. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people, Aslaya and others, are saying that you need to be careful not to show preference, even though you might have a private opinion. You need to be careful not to show preference. Yeah. Not to show that you've got kind of a private opinion favoring one side or the other. Let's not show any kind of bias like that. No kind of a preference, right? Yes, we need to show that we are being impartial. And we need to really guard about that. Even if we do have a private opinion, which of course we do, we can't show it as a preference, right? You know, this is a good point, too. Charles is saying that as leaders, we have the power to sway the group towards the preferred outcome. We do kind of lead the group towards one outcome or another sometimes, but we have to be certain it's not because of our preconceptions, but because it's the best fit for what these people want to do. It's the best fit all around. It's what will be a successful outcome. And they do look to you for some guidance. That's why you're the leader. Otherwise, you'd just be another team member. But you're not. You're the leader, and they're looking to you for some guidance also. Right? Right. And, yeah, that's not using your preconceived notions, because you've thought about that very carefully. That is truly just helping sway it towards something that's the most practical outcome, perhaps. Our next topic, yeah, it's just an awareness. I'll assume that we have no preconceived notions that are negative, right? It's just an awareness of, oh, well, I do think this side is a better point, but let's hear them all. Sometimes, you know, sometimes I go in thinking that one side has a better point than the others, and by the time we have some negotiation, we've talked about it, I've kind of changed my mind. Yeah. I go, oh, I didn't think about that. It's a real good point, right? Yeah. How about physical preparation? That goes to mental preparation, doesn't it? Because if we're not 100%, we're not going to be 100% in our mental preparation either. A lot of people, Zoe and others, are voting for plenty of sleep. I must confess that that's one of the things that I don't get enough of. Because there's always something that needs to be done, right? Right. But plenty of sleep, whatever plenty is for you, is important. Because otherwise you go kind of groggy, right? Yeah. I like to kind of clear my mind, too. Does that make any sense? I see a lot of different kinds of negotiations. And I have a lot of them kind of going during the same time period. Not the same exact time period, but, you know, on Monday I have this one, on a Tuesday I have this one. It kind of goes up and back, and a lot of them are somewhat similar because you get specialized, right? And basically I do business, contract law. And so I like to really skim back over my notes before I go in so I know which one this is. And I like to kind of mentally clear my brain to think about this group, this time, these people, what this particular circumstance needs, right? Mm-hmm. And actually, I really do take three deep breaths just as a reminder, really, as a break, to go into, well, this group's mode, to go into being the leader of them, right? Yeah. And I also, as I sit there afterwards too, I do some private notes in a little notebook, or a lot of times I do it in my head, but I get kind of busy, so I put it in a little notebook, especially if we're not ongoing, real tightly seeing each other. And I make little notations about the people that's private to me, not on the record, so that I remember their personality traits and things. And we can start where we left off. Mm-hmm. And what it is that everybody was supposed to do. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. So you have to be physically alert for that. Mm-hmm. Yes. Lenny and others are talking about conservative eating and drinking, especially the drinking part, folks. I know that you can handle it, but please don't. Not before you go into a negotiation. In a warm room, right? It's with droning voices. No, you need to be alert. Yes. So if you know that you've got a meeting the next day, well, just be conservative, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Mitar and others are talking about kind of a stress-free, comfortable venue. That is surprisingly important. We're little creatures of comfort, human beings. And actually being in kind of a comfortable room with a comfortable chair, and everybody's got a nice chair, and everybody's got nice food, and the temperature is temperate, it's nice and comfortable, and like that goes towards a lot. It really does. And you'd be surprised. It's just important for mental preparation to be comfortable, to be physically comfortable and not feeling fidgety or itchy or stuffy or any of those things, or thirsty or you need to pee. No, it really makes a big difference towards mental preparation how physically prepared you are and how comfortable you are physically, right? Right. And that's why we do advocate the food that we are going to try to get to today. Because it's another comfort level. It's another thing to do that's interesting and delicious. And you get to talk to the other people, right? Mm-hmm. And it's fun. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it being fun. I always think the negotiations go better if everybody's physically comfortable, it's easy to get there and like that, and the food's pretty good. The troops travel on their stomachs. Yeah, that's kind of an old saying, but it's like, yes, the troops travel on their stomachs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So physically prepare. And make sure that the venue is physically prepared too. If you don't have time, that's what assistants are for. I personally have a lovely assistant who does all that kind of stuff, and I am very grateful too. It's a mighty fine thing. Mm-hmm. So physically prepare so you can be alert. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about our last topic. I'm going to have enough time, which is mental preparation to be a role model of the civility rules and a role model of an enthusiastic attitude. Just to be a role model, civility rules and enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth says that you cannot... that you cannot require what you do not model. It's true. You cannot require what you do not model. If you're not civil, your group won't be civil because they're going to imitate you and they're going to, well, the leader's not being surly. I could be surly too, right? Yes. No. You need to model as the leader the civility rules and the enthusiasm level. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. can require what you do not model. That's a good point. The civility rules, of course, the civility rules for those of you who are new, and we talk about them quite a bit. Prior shows archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. The civility rules are just about the only rule we have. Basically speaking, the civility rules say we will not be rude to one another. We will not be rude. We will not sigh, jingle change, make faces. We're going to let everybody have their turn, give them their chance to speak. We will just plain ordinary will not be rude to one another, right? Yeah. And you as leader, even though you're being sorely tested because they're really acting like bad two-year-olds, no. You as leader must be a model of the civility rules. You must never raise your voice, roll your eyes, sigh audibly, any of that kind of stuff. And everybody gets an equal turn to speak, right? Right, yes. Even if you've got to time it. I know that you guys have different ways of doing it, and I respect that. Personally speaking, I use a cooking timer. Because, you know, the kind that you turn the knob to however amount of time everybody has to speak. It goes tick, 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 so that you can see it. I just put it right on the counter or wherever we got, the table. And it goes, and you see when it's getting closer. And then it goes ding, and then you've had your turn, right? Yeah, which means that everybody is satisfied that they've had their turn and nobody got ripped off, right? Yeah, because everybody always thinks that they have 3 minutes less to speak than the other person. Mm-hmm. So, the civility rules. We will not be rude to one another. We will not interrupt with someone else's turn, right? Yes. And the enthusiasm levels. Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, that's a good point. The point is being made that I should say, which of course is true, Jared and others, are saying that the civility rules are very important all through life, but they're very important at our stage, our leadership stage, to enforce consistently. Immediately, it will not be capable of being enforced once you've allowed people to treat each other horribly. No. Civility rules are in place immediately, consistently, every time, and fairly, every time for everyone. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. As for enthusiasm levels, enthusiasm is kind of contagious, right? Well, yeah, I suppose. Kristen and others are saying, even if you have to fake it. Well, okay, sometimes you're not feeling as enthusiastic as others. We got that. But it's contagious. You need to maintain enthusiasm for the process, for this group, for them reaching their goal, or else they'll never do it. Because if the leader is no longer enthusiastic, if the leader is uncivil, that everybody else will be too. The whole thing's going to fall apart. Just take my word for it. You're the role model. You're the leader. You're the one that everybody needs to emulate. So make yourself worth emulating. Yes, 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 yes. Now, one of the ways to do this that Recipe for Peace Now does indeed advocate is to have some food in the room, because it gives you, especially with the civility rules, it gives you a spot, a moment, a time to call a timeout if you think that things are getting to be a little uncivil. Mm-hmm. Or to have a quiet word with someone, right? Because we're all going to have a bite to eat and we're all going to be standing around, right? Right. Mm-hmm. And it gives you a chance to really get to know each other as people, not as symbols for whatever kind of a group they represent that, well, somebody in the room might not be all that fond of, right? Mm-hmm. So it's good to have some food in the room. It also, when you have a timeout, it also keeps people from wandering off and having a smoke and talking on their cell phones and stuff like that. Because they don't want to miss it. It looks so delicious. If you're going to have food, and you are, you want to have everybody take a survey and find out if there's any kind of food prohibitions. You don't want anybody to have a bad time, right? Yeah. You don't want people to somehow have something that they can't eat, they're allergic to, a religious prohibition, they won't eat, or something like that. You give this information to everybody so no one brings something that they can't share. Also, when people bring something, you want them to actually bring a list, not what it's called, but what is in it, so that we can all determine if we can eat it. We can run our eye down the list, right? Right. Yes. And so everybody's got the list, and you've taken the survey. I think you should also have at least one safe recipe. A safe recipe is what everybody in your group, we've already taken the survey, of course, can pretty much eat because you have taken the survey, and they'd be familiar with it, familiar with the ingredients, so that it wouldn't be a surprise because they're going to be on the list. So we're going to start this time with the safe recipe. I was going to try to get the two of them in, but I'm not sure I'm going to make it. We'll find out. So this safe recipe, I know it's been hanging around, I've been promising it for a little while, is called pepper and steak pasta. Delicious. You've taken your survey. You know that it's okay to have peppers and things like that. And we are going to serve this. It's delicious. I called it pasta. You all know that I think that if you're going to have pasta in a group setting, it should be something that's capable of being put in a spoon and shouldn't be long and stringy and need tongs. It is just a neatness thing and a mess thing. So tongs tend to hit the floor, you know, dribbly. So, yeah, so you want to have as little mess as possible. And also you want people to be able to take kind of a small amount to begin with, decide if they like it, and then take lots. So this is our safe recipe. We're going to have about a pound of pasta, the dried pasta. We're going to cook it al dente, kind of firm. We're going to drain it. We're going to set it aside. Let's have a cup of peas. You want to be a good person, you can use ones that you shell, real peas. I personally am going to use frozen because it's easy, it's cheap, and I have a lot of access to it. And I'm going to use a cup of frozen peas, but I am going to thaw them and pat them dry, right? Right, so that they're not little icy cold things. Let's have a pound of roast beef. Already cooked, right? If it's not already cooked, you know you have to brown it and everything. I don't like to say this because I worry about you guys and leftovers and that you're going to give someone food poisoning. But if you've been careful, this is the perfect recipe for leftovers, right? Yeah, because we're going to just take a pound of roast beef and we're going to cut it into two strips, right? Little strips. Well, it's cut into bite-sized pieces, come to think of it, because then it'll be easier in the spoon. So, a pound of cooked roast beef. Let's have a quarter of a cup of sour cream. That always looks, it always makes it yummy more. A couple of teaspoons, which would be a tablespoon, of flour. Let's have a cup of roasted red sweet peppers. I confess that I'm going to buy them in a jar. You could roast them yourself. The jar ones are even more delicious, and they've been like marinated in some sort of vinegar or something. Drain them. Give them a little pat dry. If you put in too much of the liquid they're in, it'll get kind of watery. I'm going to put in, I got the cup of roasted peppers. I actually like a couple tablespoons of salsa to go with it, just for a little depth. I also buy that, I must confess it. Also drain it. Because we've got so much kind of spicy and vinegary, I do like about a teaspoon of sugar to balance it off. That's just my taste. If you think that's a little too sweet, you can ignore it, but I do like it. And let's have about a half a cup of chicken broth. Mm-hmm. So we've cooked the pasta, right? Mm-hmm. We've cut the meat into bite-sized pieces. And now in a little bowl, we're going to combine our sour cream and our flour. Yes, don't faint. That's what we're going to do. We'll see what we're going to do in it. Now we've got some sort of a blender. Let's combine the peppers, the roasted peppers, the salsa, and the sugar. Mm-hmm. Blend it kind of smooth. We're going to put it into a nice-sized saucepan because we're going to make everything in it. And we're going to stir in roasted peppers, the salsa, and the sugar, right? Process the blender nice and smooth. Going to stick it in a nice saucepan, and we're going to stir in the broth, the chicken broth. Mm-hmm. That sucker we're going to give a nice boil, medium heat, stir it, bubbly. Mm-hmm. Let's take our sour cream and flour mixture. Let's put that in. Mm-hmm. Another minute so that everything's incorporated. Stir in the meat. Right? We are done. We're going to take that pasta, which we might have to rewarm. Personally, I do it in the microwave. It doesn't hurt the pasta any. We've got the sauce with the meat and the peppers and everything. Pour it right over the pasta mixture. Give it a nice coating. Stir it all around so that it's fairly evenly dispersed. There you've got it. You have a pepper and steak pasta. It is delicious. Easy to do. Very, very tasty. And use something like a rotini so that it looks pretty, but it's individual pieces. Yeah. All you did was make basically a sauce with the peas and the meat. Right? Yeah. Delicious. Mm-hmm. You know what? You put the peas in there. I don't think I even mentioned them again, did I? Just take my word for it. They're cooked anyway because they're frozen, right? You want to heat them up? Put them in at the last minute into the sauce. Mix them all around. Nicely heated through onto the pasta. Good catch, guys. Yeah. So it is delicious. Everybody likes it. It looks pretty. Mm-hmm. That's a little different take. Little on the spicy side for a safe recipe. People think a lot on the spicy side. Well, don't add anything like jalapenos or something. If you must, they should be on the side. Or Tabasco sauce or something. I keep all that stuff on the side. Some people are crazy about it. They just put Tabasco sauce on everything. And some people, not so much. I'm afraid I'm in the not so much category. You know what? We've got about 5 minutes. Let's try to do the pot-roasted pork, and then we'll start with fresh ones next week. Because sometimes we only do one, sometimes we do none, and it kind of gets late. Okay, so let's do the pot-roasted pork. I do indeed like this very much. Mm-hmm. You can do it in a regular pot. If you're going to do it in a slow cooker, of course, you throw everything in. Gosh, I love my slow cooker. You throw all the raw pieces in, and you put them on on slow for about 6 hours, and food comes out. It's fabulous. So let's do this in a pan, though. Mm-hmm. If you're going to use extra roasts, by the way, since we're doing it in a pan, if you want to double the recipe or something, don't buy a bigger roast. We're going to do about a 2-pound boneless pork loin, one of those little things that's been rolled and you get it in the store, right? Because we're doing this in a pot and not really in a slow cooker, if you want to double the recipe, don't buy a 4-pound roast. Buy 2 2-pound roasts. Otherwise, it won't cook through properly. Yeah. Okay. Let's have a tablespoon of oil, 4 tablespoons of butter. I confess I like salted butter. You guys can decide. Let's have not more than 2 1/4 pounds of a pork loin, the kind that's rolled, that's all compact. I'm afraid it comes in a plastic bag around here, but kind of vacuum seal. Let's have 4 shallots that we're going to chop. Mm-hmm. This is our adventure recipe. Not only do we have pork, but I like a couple tablespoons of gin in this. Gives a little extra taste, and it's good for making it all cook together. two thyme sprigs, which we're going to pull out because we remember it better than the bay leaf, 1.5 cups of chicken stock. Let's have about 8 celery stalks that we're going to chop, 2 tablespoons of flour, 2/3 of a cup of heavy cream. Yes, do not substitute milk because it won't make it as nice. Yeah, heavy cream's not going to hurt you any. It's only 2/3 of a cup. Okay, heat the oil in half the butter in a really large, heavy saucepan because we don't have plenty of room. Going to take the pork, medium heat, 10 minutes, browned all over the place is what we're thinking of. We want to brown it on all sides. You have to turn it kind of frequently because it's kind of roundish. Yeah, browned on all sides. It'll keep the juices, and you need to do it. Take the pork, transfer it to a plate. We've still got the oil and the half the butter and some juice from the pork in the saucepan. Let's put in the shallots, frequent stirring, 5 minutes, 4 minutes, until they're nice and soft. Add the gin and the thyme. Let's stick the pork back in. You know how the pork has kind of gotten juices all over the plate. I throw those back in, too, because they're delicious. Now we're going to pour in the stock, the chicken stock. Cover it, because we put a nice big high saucepan. Cover it. 30 minutes on the fire. Turn the pork over, otherwise that you're going to get kind of a dry side and a stuck to the bottom side. So after 30 minutes, you take off the lid, you turn the pork over, you go, oh, that smells delicious. We're going to add the celery because it doesn't need to cook the whole time. We want to have a little bit of crunch left. Recover the pan and cook it for another like 40 minutes. Right. Now, while that thing is cooking, because it really needs to, which is why I told you that if you double the recipe, don't double the size of the pork. Get 2 small porks, right? We're going to make a sauce. We're going to take that remaining butter, the 2 tablespoons. We're going to mash it with the flour. Kind of makes a paste. And we're going to take that paste over it when the pork is done. We're going to take the pork out and the celery and the thyme, which we're going to remove, right? We're going to remember it. And we're going to stick that whole thing on a plate to rest. I put the celery with it. I don't think it hurts it any. Now, what you've got left in the pot is really liquid, right? It's the delicious porky, ginny, shallot-y liquid stuff. We're going to take our butter and flour paste, and a little at a time, we're going to add it in to the liquid. Stir, 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 because we don't want any lumps. Peed a little bit at a time into the simmering. It's still simmering, right, because it's been cooking. It's the fire still on. Couple minutes. Now that we've got the flour and the butter incorporated and it's not made any lumps and it's nice and smooth and we've stirred for 2 minutes, we've got it all delicious looking, yum, 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 and a little bit thick. This is the part of the cream. We could put the cream in. Stir, stir, stir. Bring the whole thing to a boil. It doesn't take very long. Take it off the fire. Slice as you slice the pork, throw the sauce, put the sauce on it. I usually put the sauce in a separate gravy container. What do they call it? A gravy pitcher, I guess. One of those gravy boats. Thank you. I put it in a container so that people can take the gravy as they go. Right? Right. You can put it into the pan with the pork for presentation also. It may be a wiser choice depending on how fast you're serving it after taking it off the fire, because if it sits in the gravy boat, it does cool off. If it sits with the pork, it just kind of goes with the pork. So that's a decision to make. There you have it. Delicious. You've made a delightful sauce to go with it that goes on it. You can pour it over it and just slice it and just kind of leave it in the pan with a spoon so that people can take as much as they want, right? Yummy. I usually make some rice that goes with that. People can take as much or little as they want. And that is our adventure recipe. It has pork. It also has a little bit of gin, which you could eliminate without really hurting very much. I just think that it gives it a little extra something, a little extra flavor. Good point. You could use juniper berries. I never have, so I don't know. I don't actually know you where you would get them, but I'm fairly certain that you could do so in a high quality grocery store. My friends, we are out of time, but we did get to both recipes. This is good because I know a lot of you have been kind of missing them, and the last few times we didn't quite make it. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.